This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 504, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
That Cuban girl that brought me low, she had that skin so fine, red lips rose like now. Her mouth was wide and sweet as well. Now in endless hours I'm dreaming of her smell. I feel as if I am looking at the world from the bottom of
the
well.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 504. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
That was just a little bit of it there. Hello.
I'm just laughing because the last thing said before we started recording was Josh saying, I don't read copy. So that got me.
We are iFanboy.
Imagine I have a trailer and I'm petulant.
We like comics, but not copy. And every week we read a bunch of comics, one of us picks our favorite book. We call it the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book, other books. Oh, lots of fun stuff. Listener mail. We have fun. We just try to have fun. That's all we're trying to do. Just have fun.
Just trying to have some fun.
Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll probably be some spoilers. So exercise some caution and don't watch the Emmys. This week, Josh A. Flanagan.
The Emmys were already on. Spoiler warning.
You're telling me that network TV shows have not adjusted for time shifting?
No, they had it. They ran a package that spoiled a bunch of shows. And
yeah, I know. Well, they should have watched it when it was broadcast. Exactly. That would be there.
Yeah, their point. I think that's fair. Totally, I think, fair. You know, hey, listen, it was all a dream. Patrick Duffy's alive. Sorry,
guys, this is not the place.
Okay,
Josh, you
because you know that we could just fly off these rails and start talking. About this.
We should just start a show called Spoiler, where we just
every week.
This week we're doing the crying game. She's a he.
See you next week.
And that's the whole show?
Yeah.
It's a movie that's remembered solely for the fact that it gets spoiled.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all anybody else remembers about it.
Yep, that and the Boy George song.
Yeah, the creepy Boy George song. Yeah.
So this week,
let's just talk about the crying game.
I saw it once. Stephen Wright's in it. I like him. He broods.
Okay, so...
This week of comic books was not great.
It was rough.
It was rough. I don't know why I keep saying I'm not going to say that before I talk about a pick of the week, but I just did, so there it is. However, on weeks like this, one thing that's nice is that we sometimes get a chance to give the honors to a book that maybe doesn't always get a chance to get that. So this week, the pick of the week is Weird World, number 4, by small-time writer Jason Aaron.
He's a new up-and-coming guy. He's hot on the scene. Yeah.
You know what? He might be something someday. Artist Mike Del Mundo. And this is one of those little treasures that I've found coming out of Battle World. And I know that I wasn't reading it because I saw Weird World and I don't know. It just didn't even register. I was like, I don't know what that is. I don't want that. I don't like the title. That's part of it. But what it is here is basically a barbarian story as this Conan-like figure, Archon, is in this world that he's been trapped in, that he doesn't want to be in, the bizarre floating island of Polmachus. No, that's what he's searching. He's searching for Polemarchus. I don't entirely know what's going on in this book, but at the end of the day, I really like it.
Explain that.
There's a lot of things that I, because part of this is like there's a whole forgetful thing and they don't know why they're there and they get caught there. And I feel like there's a backstory of some of these characters that I don't know, but it's not so much that stops me from sort of enjoying what's going on. And first and foremost, really enjoying the Mike Del Mundo art, because that's why I'm talking about this now. Mm-hmm. Really, at the end of the day, the thing that I most look forward to with this is it just doesn't look like any other book that's going on right now. It doesn't look like any other Marvel book at all. He does the colors along with Marco D'Alfonso as well, but it's definitely one of those, like, they just let the artist run with it, and it's really fun. And I think that, to a certain extent, Jason Aaron has kept the scripts fairly sparse so that he can, you know, you can just watch the artist do what he does. And it's this, like, fun little world where there's little bits of things that you recognize from Marvel. There's the Swamp of the Man things, and there's sort of their threat that if you show fear, of course, they will burn you. And then there's, what's her name? Morgan Le Fay. That character sort of shows up as the big bad, I guess, in the background.
I guess.
I don't know. I'm going to be straight up, like, this is the kind of week that it was for comics. Mm. Like, out of everything, I was like, I don't know. There's not a ton of pick of the week, so I had to really zero in on something. And, like, this is a fun miniseries. And I think that these kind of things will be – these are the kind of things that I kind of gloss over, and I figure – they'll make sense to me at the end of the story. That's how I sort of plow through things. And I go, I'm not sure what that is. And then by the time I get to the end, I go, okay, I get it. I know what they were doing. But it's a great book to look at. It's like a Conan kind of book. But, you know, with like sort of one of those Marvel analogs. And it actually, you kind of forget that it takes place as part of Battleworld until at one point, I think somebody in this, and this happened in 1872 also, where somebody sort of like very quickly, instead of saying God, just said God Doom or something like that, and you have to remember, oh right, this is part of that whole thing. But it's super fun, and I like that this is a thing that Jason Aaron is doing. I can't imagine this was assigned to him. So like he wasn't like, I want to do that thing, and maybe it was just, it's a fun little team that I don't feel like I've heard anybody mention, or and people come down on us, they're like, you know, like in Battleworld, which is somewhat true. No, but yeah, also totally like true. Yeah, but there are bits of it that are very good.
Sure.
And this is sort of highlighting, well, this is definitely a highlight of the you know, that we get to see this, or that, again, 1872 that we're going to talk about later. There's been a couple of fun things in there. And, you know, this kind of stuff, Marvel doesn't do this very often. Marvel doesn't do their, you know, they don't really go outside their genres. Even DC made sort of an effort to get outside of their superhero genre. But Marvel, for the most part, they'll do a miniseries here and there. But it was fun. And I'm starting to understand sort of what's going on. In general, and it's like this big floating island, and the thing he's looking for, this is the spoiler, by the way, at the end of the thing, the thing that he's looking for is on the other side of the island, sort of hanging upside down.
That's where the others are?
Yeah. I don't know. No. Like, imagine the island is, I assume you're not reading this, because otherwise it would make sense. There's a floating island that he's on, and then if you were to go to the bottom of it, pointing downward, upside down, is his home. It's right there. So at the end of the hero is sort of despairing, and he's like, he's basically starting to kill himself with the seppuku. I don't think they're using the Japanese term, but and you see that like just below his field of sight is his home that he's looking for. So he's a totally like a tragic hero, but it's completely stereotypical barbarian kind of dialogue, and you know, fighting and lots of crazy creatures. The colors in this are insane. I like a lot of man things. That makes me happy.
That's what I heard about you.
Yeah, I was halfway out of my mouth, and oh, there again.
I'm sorry. That was juvenile. I can do better. I'm sorry.
Can you?
I don't know. This is debatable.
There's something pure about it when you say it without thinking. Should I say this? I think we had a little of that on the 501 show. Ron, are you reading this?
No, I'm not reading this. I need to go back to this. I mean, I know. It's on my list to go back. It's the odd one where I missed it on issue 1 and 2 and 3. So I need to go. No, but I mean, I want to go back and get it. I missed it.
It won't take you long to catch up. I mean, it's like a trip to the can.
Yeah, no, Jesus. But I know how good
the longish one, but
yeah, but I know how good Del Mundo is, and of course how good Jason is. Yeah, it seems like a no brainer. It's just that, I mean, it's funny because, you know, like some, you know, like you said earlier, you know, we got some criticism for dismissing Battleworld, and I've been the one who I think has embraced it the most, I think. And this is the week that it broke me.
Really?
Yeah. I'm excited for this. All right,
we're gonna get to that. So just to sort of, I think that you dig it, definitely. Do you know what's Mike Del Mundo from? I feel like I know the name, but I can't remember. What?
Mike of the World.
I know that.
he did some comic books.
It's okay if you don't know. Off the top
of your head. He's done a lot of covers. He's the one of those guys where it's like, why hasn't he done more? You know?
Yes, like, I mean, that's the only thing. Like, I'm like, where'd this guy come from?
He did Elektra.
Huh. That's because he put them on books that people didn't read.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
That's why we didn't see some of them.
Yeah, he did Elektra. He did that the 2014 Elektra series. He did one of those Disney Kingdoms comics, The Seekers of the Weird. He did some Deadpool stuff, Dexter. Yeah. Like,
he's real good. He's much better than his resume would lead you to believe.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like this is going to be his breakout hit, but it's a hell of a showing, really. And, you know, it's just, you've got the hero, he's got the long hair and blades, and he's set upon at all times, and he, you know, everything goes badly for him the whole time, and you know, he's on his little quest. That's really what it is. It's super simple. And it's a fun book, and you guys should totally check it out. It's you know, there are four issues. I imagine there's one or two more. This is not the final issue.
We have what goes to the end of the year. We decided with Viscardi, Ron, when he was on the show, it goes till Battle World goes till January.
Yeah. Oh God, Almighty. No, I know Secret Wars number 9 comes out in December, right? And so, well, this is the thing: is that I mean, it's like stuff's gonna start in October,
right? Mm.
Like, so supposedly we're coming out of we're supposed to be coming out of it in October, but there's still gonna be a lingering overlap, at least of like maybe 2 or 3 months.
This does not have more than 2 issues left in it.
Yeah,
like just from, or it shouldn't. It doesn't feel like. I could be very wrong about that. Regardless, I know that was sort of a wishy-washy review, but like, I absolutely think out of all the stuff that's happening in Marvel right now, this is one of those things that you should check out if what I said sounds like something you would like.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is that like a lot of the battle world stuff has been fun. I can totally attest to that. It has been good.
I think it's very segmented. I think like for you can, there's all these X-Men things that are, you know, takes on older X-Men status quos, I guess. Is that the plural for status quo? Stati quo? I don't know.
Status quo.
So, I hear John Cleese yelling at me in my head right now.
Well, we're gonna get to those books in a later segment. But Josh, I'm actually pretty surprised that 1872 number 3 wasn't the pick of the week.
Yeah, me too.
I have a very specific reason why, and it doesn't make sense.
Okay, here we go. Lay it on us.
One of the things that I liked about it was that there was no superheroes. They were just the characters. And so even though I knew it was going to happen.
You knew it was coming.
Tony Stark shows up in the steam-powered Iron Man suit. It was like, yeah, I know you had to do it, but I didn't want you to.
Well, I was fine with that. It sort of felt it matched the time.
Totally. I thought it would be really cool if they got through the story without anybody being any more of a superhero than they were as their personality. And I know that is unrealistic, but that's what I felt.
Okay.
It was good. It was a real good issue.
I enjoyed Bullseye getting shot in the head.
Yeah, that was good.
Because having a target in your forehead is stupid.
Yeah, that is a good point. Yeah. I just love the map. I love the
issues
ongoing.
In. We just go back to the map. I love it.
There are ongoing references to the map. Like, the story happened, and then we got the map because the story with the map was updated to reflect the story. I like that.
If they put out a book of Marvel maps, would you make that the pick of the week?
Of course.
I probably would. I love those maps.
What if it was a book with those half maps, half cutouts of bases?
Oh, geez. Now you're talking.
Now you're talking real language. I liked it. I get that completely, Josh. 100%. But I thought if you're going to do the heroes, it's not like Thor landed in the middle of town.
Absolutely.
You know, it was like this inventor built a steam-powered iron suit, which in the realm of possibility, I guess it's not completely unrealistic.
No, and you know, the Hulk is...
Which you should be more concerned with, the Hulk's about to show up. So that's,
yeah, no, but exactly. Really, he would just die.
Well, you know, this is Battle World, man.
No, I know. And there was... that was the other thing. I'd mentioned this before, but there was a point where they sort of just slipped in God Doom.
I didn't even catch that. I don't even know what scene that was in.
I don't remember exactly, but I just remember thinking, oh, it got this.
Oh,
one.
God Doom it. I see.
Yep, there you go. It was totally tiny. And I was like, oh.
See, I didn't even catch that. They had to. I think my brain changed it to God damn it. I didn't move on.
Blame you.
God Doom it.
So, Ron, how do you feel about Simon Williams being a bad guy here?
I mean, he was a bad guy in the comics when he first came out.
That's true.
So it's not out of the realm, you know. Mm-hmm. It'll be curious to see how they handle it and how they if he repents. How long does this go on for? Who
one
knows?
More issue to be concluded.
Yeah. So I guess
Which
we'll
is
find
correct,
out.
By the way, it shouldn't go further than that. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah. We'll find out, and I'm gonna get to that in a later on in the show. Yeah, no, it's within the context of the world, so I'm fine with that. Yeah.
So now,
although he is a very dapper Simon Williams, I'll give him that.
He's sporting
a nice outfit. That's a nice
guy in the movie that shows up in town, and all the cowboys spit and go, "Look at that dandy."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then somebody roughs him up.
Is there something that I don't feel like I understand Wonder Man over the last decade? I don't know what his deal is.
Does anyone really know anyone else?
Yeah. Is he a bad guy now? Is that why?
No, still good.
Okay.
When he first appeared, much like Hawkeye, he was a bad guy.
Well, no, but recently there was that whole thing where he didn't agree what was going on.
Right.
Right. He was the villain because he became a pacifist and didn't like...
He was a wild card.
Didn't like what the Avengers were doing, so he opposed them. Because they don't know what the fuck to do with them.
And then he was involved with Remender's Uncanny Avengers.
That's when he was the pacifist.
To some extent. But it wasn't, I don't know. None of that was very, like, he's been, like,
he's one
he
of those
shows
forgotten
up,
characters that yeah. don't really have a point for.
He's also a Dosas Machina, whatever that is. You know, he's a MacGuffin. He tends to be a MacGuffin. So.
He's a little Martian Manhunter-y.
Yeah, a little bit.
But he's just one of those characters that sort of fell off. They don't really use him.
Yeah, it's the jacket. For Hank Pym, it was the domestic brutality. For Wonder Man, it was the jacket.
Yeah. So there was a time when I thought another artist doing anything on Astro City would be verboten. Mm-hmm. You know, it had to be Brent Anderson or, you know, covers by Alex Ross. That was it. It had to be it. And most recently, we've started to see fill-in artists here and stuff like that. And now after this issue of Astro City number 27, I'm like, yeah, bring it on. Because Joe Infinari doing the art on this was delightful.
See, I didn't like it at first, but I liked it by the end.
Well, yeah, once it switched, once you saw why.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is a one-shot issue that focuses on American Chibi, which is the little big-eyed.
Can you say that again?
American Chibi.
Perfect.
Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't care.
But this is a great story that kind of explains her origin, where she came from. I thought it was very clever. Yeah. It was very interesting. It was very, I mean, like good job on Kurt Busiek with the trends, with the video games and the, you know, like, yeah.
This guy also has a future in comics.
Yeah, I think he does.
You know, Josh, at the top of the show, you said it was a mediocre week of comics, and I mostly agree, although I didn't have a ton, but I thought there was a couple of standouts. I thought this was a standout issue.
Yeah. Well, you know how, like, every time an Astro City comes out, we've been crowing about it. And, like, it's good, and it's good, and it's good. I did not like this issue at all. I was like, oh, this is the one I don't like.
Interesting.
And it's not that the art was bad. I don't know. I just didn't like it.
Well, in these one shots, basically what he's doing is he's expanding the universe by giving us this little glimpse into a character, which we've done before, you know?
Yeah.
And you've got to pack a lot into that. You've got to create, you know, you got to create conflict. You got to create the origin. You got to create, you know, some sort of thing. And, you know, in this issue not only gave us the background of where American Chibi came from, but gave us a strong, although admittedly tropey, but that's what this
tropey
book is.
Superior, but that's
what this book is, though.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
I just didn't like the trope.
So we get a sacrifice, we get kind of a wish fulfillment, you know, like the where the character gets, you know, they make American Chibi part of the honor guard before she sacrifices herself. And then we get a glimpse of the future, you know, like we see what, you know, this character isn't totally gone and that it's going to be reincarnated in a different way. And it just hit on all the notes.
Yeah, I really liked it a lot.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, too.
The better single issues.
No. You just don't like cute little big-eyed characters, Josh.
That's true.
Yeah.
No, it might have been it. I don't know what it was. At the end, I was like, I didn't care. I'm not going to point to any of it and go like, oh, he blew it. That's no good.
Yeah.
But it didn't do anything for me.
You hate Chibi.
I might. That might be it. I don't like saying it. I'm uncomfortable with it. I want one of the t-shirts, though. No, I'm kidding.
So I'm kind of surprised to see Wild's End Enemy Within number one on this list. Because I remember you not being thrilled with it when they heard the first miniseries of Wild's End.
Well, to be fair, but you and Paul... Paul, you may remember, used to be on the show.
Ron is the new Paul, in case I
don't know. Ron's the new Paul, exactly. Which is different than a RuPaul. And I liked it just fine. But, like, I remember Paul just thinking it was the greatest thing of all time. And I fell off it. Not because I didn't really like it. I just kind of forgot about it, which is usually a sign that I don't need to keep reading it. But, as I said, this was a bullshit week in comics, so I was looking for something to read. And so I checked back in without having finished the last series. I could follow along with this book from Boom about animals. And it seems like what was happening in the other one was there was an alien invasion, and at this point,
yes,
they've won, or the aliens are there, and we're sort of in the resistance part. Mm-hmm. And I liked it. I was like, oh, right, no, I did like this. I want to get back into it and read some more. And so you get all these characters and that dog with the squinty eyes who was...
Right, the sort of the stoic...
Yeah, British and you learn about his past. And I don't know if they explain much of it, but he was in the Navy and had been through some horrible stuff whilst in the Navy. And I like the... Basically, this guy and all these other characters from the town are locked in a room, and there's these two science... They bring in these two science fiction authors and they hate each other to help them plan for how to fight the aliens. So that's a really fun dynamic to go around. And one of them is, you know, like a cartoonish cat. And the other one is a dog with ridiculous hair. And they're both in tweed suits. I just enjoyed it.
Because I didn't read this one because I feel like I got my fill of the
You finished the other one, though? And
yeah, I finished. I read it all the way through. I just didn't feel like I needed any more of the story.
I can understand that.
I think there was two bickering writers in the last one too.
Well, they had
a woman. I think
they had never met each other.
Spoiler.
So this would be basically the one guy sat down on the train next to the other one. He was introduced to him, and he's like, "Oh, I'm a huge fan. You do this great work, and whatever." And the other's like, "Oh, thank you very much. And who are you?" And he says his name, and he's like, "You write the worst science fiction ever." And that's basically there. And they hate each other, which I think is funny because it's written by Dan Abnett, who is in fact a science fiction novelist in his other job. That was fun. Like, if you liked Wild's End before, you should be aware that this is back and is a thing. It's very similar to that. We've moved on with the story, and we get to hang out with these people some more.
Will you continue reading?
Yeah, I'm gonna try. I'm gonna try to remember to do that. This is one of those things, like, it tends to slip under my radar, but definitely. And I really like the simplicity of the cartooning.
Can you think of a book less for you, Ron?
Fables.
This book is super British. Like, yeah. And not, like... There's different kinds of British, like old Tweety British. I like it. It's like a Mr. Toad kind of story.
So this week, if I had to pick, it probably would have been Grayson number 12.
I enjoy your progress with this because I don't know that I fully understand where it lays on your taste chart. Like you've been into
it's always a struggle with this book. I always liked the art's been great. The mm-hmm. I think it's Mikkel Jennen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's good.
And Tim Seeley and Tom King write Grayson really well. I just don't care about him as a spy. So if you recall, in the last issue, Dick...
If you recall.
So we talked about it on the show.
I know.
To go even back further, the world thinks Dick is dead. He supposedly died at the end of Forever Evil. And so then Batman said, you know, we should probably use this. Let's keep you dead. And you infiltrate this group called Spiral, which is trying to uncover all the superhero secrets. So he did that. That's what he's been doing for the last year. So at the end of the last issue, he kind of got fed up with all the Spiral antics. And plus, he's been radioing back home and has not been able to get Bruce on the radio because we all know Bruce lost his memories at the end of the last Batman arc. So he leaves Spiral. In this issue, he's back in Gotham. And it opens with a one-page scene where Alfred is helping him put on makeup because he's going to go meet Bruce. Uh-oh. But they don't want him to recognize him, so he's putting on theatrical makeup. Alfred has to do it all with one hand because he's got a fucking stump.
This is my favorite thing that you hate.
I love it.
But then once we get beyond that, it actually is a really fun issue where he goes and he meets up with Bruce, and then he meets up with Jason and Tim, and then he meets up with Barbara, and then he meets up with Damian. And in each time he meets up with them, there's a one-page, full-page shot of the person he's talking to, and then they're surrounded by dialogue balloons of dialogue from their history together, but it's taken from the history of DC Comics. So I don't know what kind of crazy research project is required, but there's stuff going back to the 50s in here. So big moments of their relationship are in these dialogue balloons. And I thought that was a really nice touch. So he meets with Bruce, but of course Bruce has now got a beard and has no memory. And during the middle of their meeting, Spiral shows up to trank Bruce and tell Dick he actually can never escape Spiral. He has to be part of it. He has to go come back. And so what he does is he recruits his siblings, you know, his other Robins and Batgirl to infiltrate Spiral and disable the Spiral technology, which keeps people's faces hidden. So he doesn't actually know who he's working for. So now at the very end of the issue, he goes back to Spiral. They're radioing in his ear saying, okay, we've disabled it. And so now he sees everybody he's working for. So now he's going to supposedly take them down now that he knows who they are. Character-wise, it was a really fantastic issue because each scene was great. Tim and Jason were really pissed. Jason punches Dick because they were upset that he lied to them. Especially since they went through the whole thing with the Joker where they all got mad at Batman for lying to them about the Joker. Barbara is got really mixed feelings because, you know, she's kind of in love with him, but she's still mad. And Damien just happy to see his surrogate dad, so he gives him a big old hug. And but there's also a great moment where they both go, "You're alive!" to each other, because we thought Damien was dead as well.
I really like that Damien and Dick have affection for each other.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that part of the story. Why don't they put Seeley and King over on Detective?
I would be fine with it. They really nail these voices and these characters. I would totally be fine with them on Detective, and I think they do a great job.
King had a weird thing happen last week where they canceled his book.
And they uncanceled it.
And then they uncanceled it because of the fans, which is... That's
so
pretty
weird.
That doesn't happen much. That's okay, fine, it's profitable.
I think you might actually want to check this out, Josh, just because for the Damien scenes, you might like them.
Okay.
It's just you can totally read this, just not knowing what's going on.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I think I'm the same way. Like, I like these characters, but like the premise of it,
yeah,
just doesn't. I read the first one, I think, and it was I didn't like the idea of it. It wasn't the execution in any way.
And I like that they all sort of came together as Robins and Batgirl at the end, mm-hmm, to sort of get Dick out of the situation. So, and this is
I wish I could.
This is the juvenile episode. And this is all leading to the Robin war story that's happening. That's the next cross.
Is that the thing? Like, they have to kill some of these, right? Like this, you can't.
Look, we're crossing our fingers. We're going to cull the ranks here, but we already tried to kill Damien once. Hopefully the second time we can do that.
The Robin Center cannot hold.
Well, now there's like 47 of them now, right?
And then there's the We Are Robin group, which also came out this week. And actually, that was actually pretty good, too. Batgirl showed up there, too. Batgirl was all in all three Batman books I read this week.
Batgirl had a Batgirl book this week. Wasn't there a Batgirl book this week?
Yeah, there was Batgirl. She was in Grayson, and she was in We Are Robin.
Man, I thought they were going to stop Batgirling all the books.
But they're literally Batgirling them now.
Literally, just put Batgirl in everything. Just put her in everything.
I love how uncomfortable the subtext of that sentence is. We're going to stop Batgirling the books. There's just no way to get out of that. What you just said. That's really horrible. We're going to stop Batgirling the books.
Oh, what's also funny is that, you know, according to Tom King, who sent an email into our 501st episode explaining their relationship, Barbara and Dick have never been together, but some of these dialogue balloons from the past seem to not
contradict that.
Yeah, well, because they all contradict. I mean,
I still say that it's just confusing. It's just all confusing. It's all screwed up. They screwed it all up.
They blew it up!
God damn it.
They blew it all to hell.
God damn you!
So if you're a Batman fan, if you're a fan of that family, I would recommend checking out Grayson 12. You can read it. You get enough context from the story to know what's going on, but it's just really great character stuff if you want to just see them, you know, all these people reacting to the fact that Dick is still alive. Whatever this costume is that Jason's wearing, it's just awful.
Isn't that always the case?
Yeah. What I'm really looking forward to from the preview art is spending weeks and weeks and weeks talking about how terrible the reimagined original Robin costume is. I'm digging in for that one.
I'm making the popcorn.
And they've showed it before, but really, this is really, I'm going to really roll up my sleeves for this.
Can I proffer something?
Sure.
So if I go to a clothes store now, I have this problem where, like, oh, I don't want to look like I'm 20, but I don't want to look like I'm 60.
Right.
And there's not really clothes for people in the middle, unless you just keep dressing the way you dressed in 1995, like Ron does. But
hey, it works.
Listen, that's a
classic look. It's a classic look.
Okay. Sure. Somebody dressed like Rachel from Friends could say the same thing, but no one would believe her. Anyway, I'm relating this to the fact that...
It's not like I'm wearing a flower leaf.
He's wearing button-down shirt and jeans. Like, what?
Literally wearing jeans and a t-shirt and sometimes a button-down shirt sleeve shirt. How is that unclassic? How is gingham not classic?
Are you drunk? Because you just said button-down shirt sleeve shirt.
I might be.
No. So the point I'm getting to is, do we hate these costumes because we're old men?
I don't see anyone who's ever said these costumes look good. I mean, if there was a groundswell of it,
and
I don't think so.
I just want to make sure. Like, are we old men, like, get off our lawning?
I completely admit that I would rather have the designs of the old DCU back. I don't need them to undo the reboot. I think the designs are better. But if there was a groundswell of people saying these mid-90s costume designs look great, I would just chalk it up to me being old-fashioned. But I don't see that groundswell.
I think you're right. I just wanted to say it out loud and make sure. And give the idea the air to breathe, which it doesn't deserve.
Isn't the majority of the show us
seeing old men? Yeah,
saying get off my lawn.
I know, but I'm trying to, you know.
Also, let's get back to the fact that you can't find clothes for people our age. I mean, what's wrong with a shirt and pants?
It's fit. Fit changes.
Oh, the fit. That's what
fit
we're talking
change.
About.
You know what I'm talking about.
You're talking about old giant man pants, or
this is what I'm saying.
Millennial pants that hang off your ass.
Exactly.
I get you.
I'm not built for that.
I understand that. Plus, you got the stubby legs.
You got the stubby legs. You're talking like the Popa.
It's a 30-inch inseam.
Oh man! All right. Well, if you want to help support,
I'm 5'10". It's average. I do have short legs, a long torso. You're no different, Kilpatrick.
I'm the exact same. I've got a long torso and short legs. That's fine.
I'm correctly proportioned. If you've got the desire to help this train wreck, if you want to help us manicure our back lawn so we can yell at people to get off, you can go to ifanboy.com/support. There are numerous ways you can help the iFanboy cause. The most direct way and the easiest way for you is to go to ifanboy.com/support, click on the link to go to Amazon, and do all your Amazon shopping via our link. We get a little kickback from Amazon of anything you buy. So if you're looking for a new pair of pants, a nice pair of slacks, perhaps,
and some gingham,
you can purchase that all for Amazon. We know you're doing it anyway, so let Amazon pay us for what you're buying. It's a great deal. If you'd like to support us in a more direct manner, you can sign up for an ifanboy.com membership where you can pay $3 a month or $30 a year, and we love the people who have done that. You are our favorite folks. Or if you don't want a recurring payment, you can just do a one-time donation via PayPal, and we accept that as well. We appreciate everybody who supported us up to this point. You help keep the lights on, keep the servers running, keep us in microphones. We recently upgraded some equipment. You might be able to hear it sounding better from one person in New England. And so that's all directly from your support. So we thank you very much. Go to ifanboy.com/support. And we thank you for supporting the show.
Hellboy in Hell. What the hell is this doing on the show?
Right?
Huh? You had dropped off all these books.
I think that there was a hiatus. I actually think I read through 6 and then it was gone for a while. Because 7 came out last month on a week that I wasn't on. And then 8 came this week.
I'm just hearing a lot of excuses from you today.
I think those were all completely valid.
Excuse after excuse.
I don't think you've checked your facts. That's what I think.
So many excuses.
I think that this rage about Alfred's hand and these costumes have clouded your judgment.
He's got a fucking stump. And he's trying to put on makeup.
Here I am trying to be well-rounded. We're trying to talk about some books. And I got you giving me guff, and I don't need it.
Stumpy. Oh,
I enjoyed Hellboy in Hell number 8.
Is he still in hell? He's still in hell.
Yeah, no, he's dead. And it doesn't appear that he's going to be undead. There's this really neat thing that they do in this book that
Wait, is he dead, or is he mostly dead?
Actually, he's mostly dead.
See, there you go. There's always a chance of mostly dead. Completely dead, no chance. Mostly dead, still got some room to work.
Are we the leading podcast in comics for 30-year-old things?
Possibly.
I'm pretty sure we're gonna lose the kids.
Lose them.
Wow, I don't ever do that to Connor. That was great.
That was good.
Oh, continue, please.
So they do this basically like Hellboy's in Hell, and it's that same thing. You know, remember, okay, you know the pancake short?
Yes.
He eats the pancakes, and then those demons, there's like the last panel is this is our darkest hour. So somewhere, some demon power is like, oh, this isn't good. And that is kind of the overall thing that's happening in this book, is that Hellboy's in Hell. He's actually learning answers to all these things that have been going on. He meets his sister. He finds out of his father and his mother. His whole thing.
He's got a twin sister they didn't know about?
I didn't know. No, it wasn't. There's another. 33 years old. I'm just going to keep ranking these things. And it's actually his half-sister. But there's this idea that he's in hell, but he's actually not quite dead. And it's a problem. They do this really neat visual thing where you see everything as Hellboy and as the other hell denizens see them, and then you sort of back up and you see them like as they really appear, which is they're like dead husks, and it sort of goes back and forth. It actually makes it a little confusing, but once you sort of get your handle on it, it's a really neat visual thing. So it's both confusing and really cool, but I think that fits in with like being stuck in limbo or in hell as it was. I actually really enjoyed this, and I haven't read Hellboy in a little while because I read 7 and 8 sort of one after another right in a row, and I was like, all right, cool, I got this. So it's good. I'm in.
All right. So Invisible Republic, second story arc, issue number 6 came out this week. And I was actually expecting there would be a little more of a break in between the arcs, but I was glad to see this come so quickly. And I was also glad to see insanely good art again. Yeah. And I know it goes without saying, but I was just blown away by the level of details Gabriel Hardman's putting into the backgrounds, the subtle color changes that are guiding us through the different time periods that are being covered here. Like, it was just great. And best of all, there was a mention of us in the letter column.
But also the sepia tone flashback was really great.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought this was my favorite issue of it so far, because I think I really started to understand who the people are and their relationships are, and I really kind of think also that the male-female writer duo who are our heroes are kind of autobiographical.
Yeah.
At least in their personalities.
Yeah. And honestly, this is...
I don't know how that didn't occur to me.
Yeah, think about that. But they're packing a lot into these issues, not only from a story standpoint, yes, but there's some great back matter. I mean, Karina has an article about the space elevator.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's really great. I mean, like, this is continues to be one of the best comics being put out.
And thank you, Roy Seitz III, for mentioning us in the letter column.
Yeah, appreciate it. And thank you, Karina, for saying they like us, too.
Ron, you've been reading all these S.H.I.E.L.D. 50th anniversary specials. I read the first one, but I didn't read any more. Did you read this one?
No, I bailed out on this one.
So this was Fury, and I thought, well, I like Nick Fury.
I didn't recognize a single name on the cover, so I didn't bother.
Well, so I picked it up, and this was a... So they, each of these issues have been featuring... So there was the Agent Carter one, and there was the... what was the what was her name? What is...
It's not Agent Sky anymore. Work here anymore?
It's not Sky anymore, Ron.
Who Quake.
And the first one was actually S.H.I.E.L.D. itself, and that was the best one. But this was a Nick Fury one. I thought, well, two things. One, maybe I'll get some old-school Fury action, which I always love. And two, maybe I'll learn some more things about this new Fury, and maybe that will help me like him some more.
Was there any Starenko?
There was no Starenko. I think that was only the first time. So this story happens in which, in the modern days, new Fury goes to stop the hate monger because he's exploiting the current racial unrest in America. And there's some parallels between 65 and 2015 in here, which were well done. And so then accidentally ends up in a Hydra time machine with the hate monger. They both go back in 1965, where new Nick Fury has to team up with his dad without telling him who he is. And hate monger decides, hey, since I'm 1965, I'll just go kill Barack Obama when he was a kid. And so then they have to stop him from doing that. So,
that was uncomfortable.
Well, they don't call him that. They call him Barry. But, you know, you get the implication. So it was all right. It was fine.
I do love the hate monger.
Yeah, he's silly.
Although,
yeah, wait a minute.
I mean, I'm not with him. I'm against him. But,
as a villain, he's one of those crazy sort of 70s Marvel concepts.
60s. You
know, 60s Marvel concepts.
Yeah. He's a Kirby.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no. It was fun. It was all right. I still don't know much about old, new Nick Fury. I still miss old Nick Fury, so there you go. More old man stuff for you, Josh.
So as earlier we were talking about the Battle World books. And
this I am very excited for this.
This week saw the release of Extinction Agenda number 4 and Years of Future Past number 5. And I'll give you the good. Extinction Agenda number 4 featured Mystique briefly fooling somebody by posing as Archangel in the blue and pink costume with the silver wings.
Archangel.
Yeah, Archangel.
We know it's Archangel. Yes. I mean, I know it, and I know that Connor knows it, but do you know that, Ron?
What, that it's Archangel?
No, that it's not Archangel. It's Archangel.
Arch.
It's a biblical term, so...
Archangel.
I'm feeling confident about this. Archangel. That's the oldest reference on the show so far. 16 years old.
But it was great
to say Back to the Future, then only 30.
Yeah, well, it was great to see Back to the Future is what educated me on that reference. But anyway, it was great to see that costume come back. And both of these, I guess, were the last issues. Because you got to the very...
Welcome back to the show, Ron. Now you are truly one of us.
You got to the very last page. You got to the very last page of the book, and it ended on, you know, just like, and this happened, and then a Marvel logo.
Huh.
And this is where I finally exasperated and said, you know, like, and Days of Future Past especially ended on, you know, the last narration box, the last dialogue of this issue is... Is there truly a difference any longer? Marvel. And it's just like, and I was just like, I threw my hands up in the air. I'm like, can we just get regular books back, please? Because the problem with these Battle World books is they were fun little what if experiments. And there's a reason why What If was one, two issues at the most.
Right.
Because when they go on for too long, it's just like, all right, well, what's the point here? And they told the story, and now it's just like, punctuation with the Marvel logo and just, you know, and I was like, for Christ's sake, I just want regular comics back.
Here's what I love. I love that they have broken us down and made us into hypocrites.
Yeah.
Because for years, and people have called us out on this and they're totally right.
Yep.
For years, we're like, listen, it doesn't matter if you enjoy the books, they're good, whatever. And now we are like, you know what? You're right. Fuck this.
Yep.
Well, that is accurate. We also are enjoying the ones that are
Well, that's the thing.
A lot of these aren't good. That's the problem.
The problem is that they're not. Some of them aren't good. Some of them are really good, but they can only go on for so long before you lose. Once you tell that story, then it's like a balloon that flies away, and you'll never have it again. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a nice place to visit, but you don't want to live there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing is, we don't have the regular books
to offset
as a bedrock. To hold on to all these other things. We only have these other
ephemera. This is similar to the discussion we had, Josh, and you were not here with Viscardi, in that if you don't have a foundation for these books, then they don't mean anything.
Yeah.
I need a backbone.
What I mean by that is you don't know what you're reading. You don't know what you're supposed to be feeling. If you don't know the world, and you can establish the world in one issue, you can do that. Most of the world's books do it all the time, or did it all the time. But a lot of these books, I go back to Ultimate End. We don't know what the hell we're reading there. Is it in the Ultimate Universe? Is it in this battle world? Is it both? Why are these characters? Why do some of them seem to know about this and some others don't? Is this really wrapping things up? We don't know what we're reading, so we can't emotionally engage with it.
And here's my worry. In the middle of both of these books is the little insert, the plug-in insert promoting the new books that are coming out in November, which are now post battle world and whatever, you know. And we've got all new Wolverine number one, which is X-23, fine, you know. But then I'm flipping through the rest of them. And these are just like, wow, I like the battle world concept, I think, is going to be the status quo.
Well, because a lot of it's staying.
Yeah, these are just all over the map. And these books, I'm like, All New X-Men number one from Dennis Hopeless and Mark Bagley. Like Ultimates number one from Al Ewing and Kenneth Rocafort. You know, like Black Knight number one from Frank Thierry and Luca Pizzari. And the tagline is Weird World, Cursed Sword, Doom Knight. So weird world is going to continue, you know, like I think it's
kind of like there's a bunch of dice and they're just shaking them out. Whatever comes up from whatever universe is what's part of this new world. I think that's the story idea, is that Doom's world doesn't really end. It sort of consolidates into one reality. And some pieces from some universes are going to stay. Some from other realms are going to stay. And it's going to be sort of a hodgepodge of all these things as the new Marvel universe.
Yeah.
Do not want, I believe.
Now Ron is feeling how I feel about the DC books, and now he knows my pain.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, no, this totally, I feel like this is the DCification of Marvel. Yeah. We'll see if that goes through, but yeah, I need a through line. I'm fine with just telling little stories and stuff like that, but I do want a spine. I do want, you know, but
is the idea that like they'll just keep doing this until they hit on something they can make a movie from?
No, because I firmly believe that publishing doesn't care about the movies. And as recent events, the movies doesn't care about publishing either.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, like they're just doing whatever they want to do, and they're just. And the thing is that publishing is in this world, both Marvel and DC, where they're fighting for the fucking top 10, the diamond top 10. You know, so short sighted. Don't get me started. Whatever.
No, go ahead.
No. I mean, they're just it's all sale. It's all sale.
Well, hold on. Let's go to the emails, because I think the first email will also be part of this discussion.
So. All right. So first email comes from Nick from Luxembourg via Newport Beach, California. Okay. I guess Nick is from Luxembourg, but he's in Newport Beach right now.
I don't know. It was interesting, so that's where I left it.
He's from Luxembourg and now lives in Newport Beach.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. All right.
He joined the Republican Party. That's nice.
I don't know how to say hello in Luxembourgian. So,
French.
I believe it's called Kaching.
Belgian? Is it Belgian?
Belgium speaks French.
Okay. All right. All right. So I know all this stuff. I'm kidding, by the way. All right. So Nick says with the
I don't think anyone believed that, especially me. No, I totally knew that. Anyway, let's move on.
Nick says, with the recent push to $4.99 single issues, you wonder if the price of books is really based on the value of the content or just quote-unquote what people are willing to pay. I have once worked for a multinational company, and for those of you who have as well, you know that it's all about profit. Once you reach profit for one financial year, it's all about the next year and how you should make more money. This model doesn't seem sustainable for me with comics and their shrinking reader base. The push for profits also means new books and characters don't get a chance to develop, because once projects are losing money, it's better to shift creators to books that will make money. I haven't heard of the price increase benefiting creators at all. So my question is, where does it all stop? Will we eventually get only Batman and Avengers books at $9.99 an issue? How can comics companies actually build and foster new readers and new lines of revenue? And he's right. I mean, the $4.99, the $3.99 and $4.99 books are purely I've asked people in comic book stores, retailers and customers, does anyone bat an eye at the price tag? And everyone says nope.
Long time ago, when we had Jason Wood from 11 O'Clock Comics writing our business column at iFanboy, he wrote an article about Inelastic versus Elastic pricing for comics and how people just don't care.
Yep.
They say they care.
They say they care, but they don't care.
They get their stack, and then they get. I watch it happen on Isotope. They're like, okay, that's $47. They go, ooh. And then sometimes they're like, sometimes someone will be like, really? Why? Oh, $4.99. Okay, here's my credit card.
Yep.
You know? Yeah.
It's exactly what people are willing to pay, which is what basically every product is.
Yeah, and the sad reality is that Marvel and DC are publicly owned companies that are reportable to people above them and ultimately to shareholders. And for them, it's all about profit, and that's what it is. And the trends of what sells now have changed to short-term, quick, you know, like these sort of things, and that this is what we get now.
Do you think – I think there's somewhat an element, though, of economies of scale in that – talent, overhead, like these things are expensive and they don't sell a ton of them anymore.
Right.
So the other side of it is that as this becomes increasingly a niche product, at least on the front end, meaning the issue sales, I assume most of them are really using the issues to gauge whether they can afford it or not, and everything else seems to be bonus. That's the way that I feel like Marvel and DC do, you know, whether they want to continue a series.
You're saying is if they make money off the issues, then whatever they make off digital and trades is a bonus.
Yeah, they consider the economics of it are considered with their issue sales for the most part.
I don't know.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. Marvel and DC are focused on issue sales. DC's, I think both digital is truly the icing on the cake, and I think DC is a little more focused on book and trade sales than Marvel.
They do so well in the book market.
Because they do so well in the book market, also because Marvel, as a business practice and business standard, do not like to keep things in inventory. And that comes from Ike. So
then if we're talking about
crazy,
when we're talking about like a book that sells 40,000 copies or something, and you're talking about the overhead of having, you know, an editor, an assistant editor, an artist, an inker, a colorist, a writer, a letterer, and you know, all those things. And, you know, those are people who generally need to make a living wage. You know, they're not, depending on who you're talking about, they're not making a ton of money, but it's not nothing. You know, at a certain point, given the sort of the amount of issues that they can sell, that $3.99 doesn't seem as unreasonable because that product is more of a niche thing. I mean, I don't feel like their issues are like they're not getting rich from selling issues.
No, but that's their operating model is that they need to sell a certain. Every publisher has a certain number of titles that they will publish on a monthly basis, and through various reasons of printing costs and shipping deals and stuff like that, they need to print and sell a certain number of those to make the operational budget, and then all that. But so in a lot of cases, they are. I mean, like, you don't think Marvel does – like, why does Marvel – Why does Marvel dance a jig every time they get and do a press release every time they get a book that with orders to come in over 100, 200, 300,000? Because they're making a ton of money on that.
Sure, but those are outliers.
Well, yeah, those are outliers, but those outliers are the ones that are the home runs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, that's why there's all this push to do a bazillion and one covers for Star Wars number one and all that sort of stuff.
Right, but at the same time, they're not saying, well, we can support this other series. We can support Grayson because the profits on Star Wars – I'm mixing them, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to think of a – we can support a book like Weird World because the profit – and Jason Aaron's still getting his page rate.
Right.
We can support a book like Weird World because we're selling so many issues of Secret Wars. It doesn't work that way. It's compartmentalized more.
Yeah,
so each book is responsible for itself.
Yeah.
And if they do get a hit, which is what they want, then that's great for that hit. But it doesn't.
Yeah, like you know, like I'm sure Spider Gwen surprised everybody. You know, like and so great. So now that book is sustaining itself. Yeah, each book. The sense I get, and I have no prior knowledge or anything like that, but the sense I get is that the success of Star Wars is not helping. You know, Deadpool. You know, or not helping.
Each book is its own P&L.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, there's also another angle of this is that, and it's sort of from the tone of Nick's email, and it's not Nick alone, a lot of people think this way, is that because it's art, it should be treated as art and not as a business.
It's a commodity. It's not art.
It's very similar to people treat actors like this all the time. Why did you do that shitty movie?
Yeah.
I remember there was a press conference last year for some shitty movie, and Sam Shepard was in it. The reporter asked him why he did this movie, and he said, well, I got a house. I got to pay for a mortgage.
Right.
I mean, these are businesses and jobs, and and they're not going to keep the price low just because you want to read the stories. I mean, they have to sell the books. They have to make money doing it.
And they have to charge a certain amount. I mean, like so there's also other people on that food chain. Marvel sells the book to Diamond. Diamond sells the books to retailer. Retailer sells the book to you. That's $4 an issue. Everybody gets a taste. You know, like how much money is really.
Everybody wets their beak on that.
No, but like they're not. These are not high margin businesses,
right,
unless you get one of those hits. So, but we're not counting that because that's an outlier that only applies to that one book.
Right.
Well, but also I do agree that $4.99 for 20 pages is too much.
Totally.
Yeah.
I wrote that article a long time ago too about iFanboy, about what was too much, and that $4.99 was my line of it.
Yeah, yeah, it's ridiculous.
All, you know, that's really good. I think that's when you're going to start seeing people drop off.
Yeah.
Can you imagine $5.99 for a 20-page comic?
It's going to happen. People will pay it. They will.
I know.
Yeah. I wonder if we will see the breaking point at some point where, like, they just go to a certain point and all of a sudden sales drop off. But again, it won't matter because enough people will still buy them to leave it out.
Maybe. Rick from Topeka, Kansas says, I was excited when a con began to happen in my hometown. The first one was small and thrown together at the last minute. It was well attended and showed great hope for the future. The second one was this weekend, expanding from 1 to 3 days and beginning to look and feel like a con with Artist Alley, panel discussions, wider variety of vendors. I wanted to suggest they try to get more talent from Marvel, DC, Image, etc. I also know before I make a suggestion, I better ask someone who knows, how does an up-and-coming con attract some of the talent of more widely known publishers?
Well, I know. I mean, at all. I mean,
Ron knows.
I know. Yeah, I know. And I know a lot about all this. I mean, it all comes down to money, and that, you know, believe it or not, the publishers are nearly not involved at all with the booking of talent at shows, because the writers and artists that you like, they are not employees of those companies. They are contractors.
Independent
contractors. So if a con like Emerald City Comic Con, which always has a great lineup, they are inviting all of those guests and paying their travel and paying their flight and airfare and all that sort of stuff,
which makes it more attractive to other people,
right?
Who they're not paying for, right? Because they know all those other guys are going to be there, which attracts people, which means I have a chance of making more money and I will also have a good time at that show,
right? And so, you know, so really it comes down to money. It comes down to the con's ability to fly out that stuff. You want to put on a con, you know, you can get Stan Lee. You can get everybody.
As long as you pay for him,
exactly. You know, so that comes down to it. And so that's why it's tough for independent cons to kind of get off the ground. You know, honestly, I made the prediction about a year or two ago when Wizard was really making a big push that I thought we were going to see a changeover where we were going to see talent not only getting their expenses covered for the trip, but then also paid to be at the con. Luckily, that has not happened.
Does that not happen to any of them? That
happened? No, it's happened, but not on a wide scale enough basis to be actually a thing. You know,
and it's usually not the comics people
who
get.
The celebrities and all that kind of stuff, don't get me wrong. I mean, the numbers I've heard about that stuff is crazy. Remember when Chris Hemsworth appeared at CCM2?
That was just nuts.
So, yeah. I mean, it all goes back to business. It's like the publishers think it's great to have it's a weird kind of cycle, you know, because like a con builds up and you get people to come by having creators there and publishers there, but creators and publishers won't go unless there's a crowd, but the crowd won't go unless the creators and publishers are there, you know. So you've got to have the investment to drop to entice enough creators to come in order to get attendees to come, and you need enough attendees to come in order to convince the publishers to come exhibit, because the publishers, they pay to exhibit, you know, like San Diego and Emerald City and New York Comic Con. Like, the publishers have to pay for the booth space, for all that sort of stuff. It's a big
all
endeavor.
The people, all the hotels.
It's a big endeavor for the publishers to show up.
Do you think, and I do, that we are starting to become oversaturated with cons?
Oh yeah, there's too many.
I mean, now the season now is March.
Well, there isn't a season. It's almost every
week. Yeah, there's
okay, in the United States, it's roughly.
No, March. It's like every. Trust me, I've done this for my day job. There's a Comic-Con every month.
Yeah, which I think is great. But no, on one hand, I think it's great because it's bringing this stuff to more people and all this sort of stuff. The problem is that as a comics, if this is your hobby and this is your thing, picking and choosing what show to go to gets harder because there are so many.
Yeah, but at the same time, as a pro, then like you've really got to pick and choose what you're going to do, and then if you want to work in comics, then part of the thing you want to consider is like, do I want to be on the road every weekend?
Right.
Because when you're doing that, you're not working. Trust me. Nope. I mean, I've seen that.
You're falling behind. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I've seen that firsthand.
I mean, I don't know. There's something that, if I'm going to be wistful about it, there was something about 15 years ago, 12 years ago, where like there was
old
a handful.
Old man, Josh.
No, it's true. There's like a handful of big shows, and they were big deals.
Yep.
And now, like every comics pro I know is traveling all the time. And
in 1997, I saw Jimmy Eat World playing a VFW hall. You know, like
fair enough.
You know, like that's what happens. There's a time.
And then they got day jobs because they couldn't sell enough of that album.
No, but there are times where, you know, it's young and you're on the ground floor and it feels fantastic. And, you know, there was a time, remember, we used to go to, you know, 5 to 8 shows a year.
Yeah.
You know, like Emerald City, and then Heroes Con, and you know, like all in San Diego and all that stuff. It was fun, but now it's crazy. So.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's one of the things. Like you worked in this. You had to go to a ton of shows.
Yeah. It's exhausting. Yeah.
It's exhausting, and like that's one of the things. Like, why I don't really want to work in comics. Like I don't want to do that, and that's what the job is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun. It's like you want to keep going to a party every weekend. It's like.
Yeah,
you know, that's fun for a while, but that year that we did 5-6 shows or something like that, we did that for a couple years in a row. Yeah, like that stopped being fun.
That broke me for shows, yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like you're absolutely right. It's also, it's great for fans because not everybody can afford to do all these things. So if you've got people getting, you know, dispersed further and lots more people get to go see stuff and regional shows are good and everything, but boy, it feels like there's a lot of them. And so it's harder to make them stand out or be impressive. So, I mean, the original thing of this guy's question is like, you know, how what do you do? Well, the more that you get, the less options you have for pulling people in, especially when you got a weekend where there's several shows going on. You know, there's only so many people to go around.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Rick. And
yes.
It's
a good question.
Rick and Nick. Thank you, Rick and Nick, for your emails. The email is contact@ifanboy.com. You can also call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOY-326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and keep it around 30 seconds.
And if you had heard us last week, we had teased a little bit of an announcement. So if you had followed on social media, you already know about this. But if you don't follow us on social media and you didn't hear it, and we know that there are thousands of you who didn't, we launched a new podcast this past week. Last
what?
Month.
It's called Spoiler.
Yeah. No, we launched a new podcast called...
Well, because it sounds a lot like Serial, so we decided to go with that.
No. In reality, we launched a new podcast called The Goodfellas Minute. And where the three of us are analyzing the Martin Scorsese film Goodfellas 1 minute at a time. If you're familiar with the Star Wars Minute podcast, where our friends Alex Robinson and Pete the Retailer have been analyzing the Star Wars movies, it is the same format. They said it was cool. We're all friends. And so, yeah, so you can go to goodfellasminute.com where you can get the past episodes, and it's in iTunes, and you can subscribe to it, and all the links are there on the website. We're really excited about it. We're having a blast. We got a ton of great feedback on it. Seems that other people are enjoying it. So if this sounds like your thing, give it a shot. We'd appreciate it.
And also, the episodes get better.
They do.
There it is. So. Like this week's, they were pretty good. Next week's are even better. I think you're going to have fun.
Well, the first week was a lot of talking about credits and
a lot of credits.
So that's, that has a lot to do with it.
Movie now the story has begun. It's a lot more fun. So check it out, goodfellasmen.com.
And it's worth mentioning it's a daily podcast, Monday through Friday. It's only about 15 minutes or so. So it's perfect for commutes, things like that. And if you're a fan of the movie, you got to listen to it. So goodfellasminute.com.
You're going in that first episode, you're like, oh, they're talking about fonts a lot. That doesn't continue.
Yeah.
Just talk about fonts at the beginning because that's all there is.
Yep.
Head over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show and talk about this week's books. You can find all of our other podcasts there. These are other ifanboy-related podcasts over at ifanboy.com. Follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter. That's where you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Ron XO. And if you're so inclined, there's also at GoodfellasMin because you can't have a super long name in your Twitter handle, but you can follow that Twitter account
as opposed
to
the Chibi Goodfellas, which is Goodfellas Mini.
Chibi Goodfellas.
Chibi.
If you like our show, you can write a review in iTunes. If you like that other show, you could also write a review in iTunes.
Don't be all secretive. If they like Goodfellas Minutes, a new podcast actually is important to review, to give it a rating. So if you have heard that show, if you're one of those people listening this week, please go to iTunes and give it a rating because it's a new podcast. That's how it gets out there and people find it. So we'd appreciate that as well.
And with all of the things that we do, the best thing that you can do is to tell people about it either in person, in social media, via text messages. You know, we're still up for that weather balloon USB drive thing. If that's a thing that you want to do, that's totally fine.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Definitely do that.
Whatever. you should. That's a good idea is what you should. That's, that's just 100% solid idea all the way through. Do that. That's a show.
You can help.
That's 9 years old, just so you know.
Is that only nine?
Yeah, nine. Yeah.
If anybody knows what that is, that's very – we shouldn't be doing it. That's how not widespread that is that we just – Anyway, so thank you for your help with that. And try not to review the last 5 minutes or the first 5 minutes of a given episode.
Yes.
Just leave that out of it is what I think would be the best.
It's probably a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That wraps this up.
We're back, baby. We're doing – we haven't done this many podcasts in like – since like 2006.
Six per week.
What's really interesting, I don't know if this happened to you guys, but now that we launched Goodfellas Minute, I've had a lot of friends and stuff like that saying, we should do blank podcast. Yeah. And I actually had to say to somebody last night, listen, I'm already on three shows. I don't know if I don't have bandwidth for any more here. So there you go.
Yeah. There's also a lot of people suggesting what our next movie will be. We're not even 10 minutes into the first film.
Yeah.
We got a long way to go.
So. All of a sudden, now I know how Pete and Alex feel.
Right.
Yeah.
But thank you if you have listened to our, thank you very much. If you haven't, please check it out. It's a lot of fun. It's not just about Goodfellas. It's also us talking about Ron's childhood in Long Island a lot and clothes he wishes he wore. So
we all do it in character, too.
It's all fun. So check that out at goodfellasminute.com. And thanks for listening to this show. Until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Josh. Get out of here. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ifanboy.